What a word of faith and what a word of truth. And may that, boy, I tell you, that is, if I have you, I have everything. How many of you really believe that? How many of you have ever experienced that, by the way? You know, when you'll believe it, when you experience it. When Jesus is, you'll find out Jesus is all you need when he's all you have. And I'm going to tell you, it's a tough place to be. But the thing that I found is he can pull us through, and the Lord does, and he provides for our lives. We're in a series now on the home, right? How many of you have been here for both of them already? Couples and the man part, whole man and whole couples. Okay, good, good. All right. Well, praise the Lord. How many of you are not going to miss any of the rest of them? Okay. All right. I'm not missing one. You know, it's so funny how most of the time the very one you need the worst is the one you miss. I don't know how that happens. I don't know. You couldn't plan it and strategize it any better. But somehow it just seems like that if you miss one, it's going to be the very one that you really needed to grab onto. I don't know about you guys, but really at almost any time, any good information and good news that about relationships is good to get. In this old crazy world that we live in that tears everything down, that comes against couples and really the family in general, everything about the family, the values of the family, the traditions of the family, the making of the family, everything about family life seems to be tremendously under siege today. And there's not a lot of relief in sight, sad to say, about all of those things. And so the Lord, I think, begins to give us some really good information that can change our lives and affect our lives about relationships. And today, I know I'm talking to singles, particularly to singles, but generally to everybody in the house today. I know we have lots of singles, actually, in our church. Just word of interest for anybody out there. We have a lot of singles in our church. We have young ones and we have some adult singles. We have of course our youth and our children that are growing very quickly in this world that we live in, knowing way more than they should, way quicker than they should, and being confronted with things quicker than our generations ever were in their lives. So it's never too early to start talking to single people about what lies ahead in life for them, because for the most part, singles are looking for a mate. Yeah. Now, not every single solitary single is looking for a mate, but most are. And the reason most are is because of the way God designed this world to be. God said in Genesis chapter 1 that he created man and he created woman, male and female, created he them. And then he said to them, now be fruitful, which has to do with your life. Have a fruitful life. Be productive, you know. Bear the fruit that God's put in you. And then multiply, which is that having babies part. Be fruitful and multiply and replenish the earth. In other words, God created us to have babies and to have more people on this earth. And this earth to keep replenishing itself over and over and over. Now we have almost 8 billion people on the earth. And the earth can hold plenty, plenty more than that. So don't let people alarm you about the fact that we have a lot of people. God's prepared for all of that. This whole earth's prepared for all of that. And in order to have babies and children and, you know, and put them in an environment where they're going to be successful, where they're going to be trained and taught, where they're going to see things, where they're going to be influenced by things, they belong in a family. Mm-hmm. And this is what God has designed us to have. And to have families, you have to have relationships. And those relationships have to be long-term relationships. Not, you know, I'm here 2 or 3 years and then I'm gone and then we'll bring in the next in 2 or 3 years and the next. That's not the way God intended for families to be. God intended for one man and one woman to have their children and to rear their children and to grow old together and come see him. That's the way God intended for families to be. Now, we know that Most families are not that way nowadays. They're just not. And we could beat ourselves over the head. We could say this ought to be and this should be. We could feel all guilty about it. And we could, micromanage and take everything apart. And we could shame ourselves to death about why it's not that way. And it was my fault. And it was their fault. And it was both our faults. And it was everybody's fault. And it was nobody's fault. It was God's fault. It was devil's fault. I mean, there's just plenty of everything to go around. But instead of doing that, I think what is most productive is, let's see what we can do to make that pattern cease. Now, I know that, I can't change the world myself. And one message or one series wouldn't change the world. But I think it can help you guys. And I think you're in the environment that you're in within this little family of God right here that God's called us to be in, that we can help each other have the kind of lives that God has prepared for us to have, a happy life, a fulfilled life, a noble life, a great life for our children, for us, for our families. And all we have to do is obey. Like I said last week, obey. Yeah, all you have to do is obey, because he's given us all kinds of instructions that bless our lives and help us. Let me give you a verse here. This is in Proverbs 18. As a matter of fact, all the verses today, except for one, will come out of Proverbs 18. This is verse 22 of Proverbs 18. Look at what it says. He who finds a wife finds a good thing and obtains favor from the Lord. Now, I don't think this verse is trying to be exclusive. By that, I mean, I think it could be a husband also. There. It's not just a completely male verse here, okay? It's intended to say to you that mates come from the Lord. That's what the intention is. Yeah. And that it's God who's going to give you a mate. Mm-hmm. And when you get a mate from God, that mate's going to be a completion of your life. It's going to be a fulfillment for you. And therefore, you are going to have favor with the Lord. And I love T.D. Jakes' famous statement, what? Favor ain't fair? Mm-hmm. Yeah, favor ain't fair. Yeah. You get favor from the Lord. So in order to receive a mate, the Bible says that I must wait on the Lord because it is God who gives us mates. Mm-hmm. Now, if you notice the verse, it's kind of a little strange and a little awkward thought. I don't know if you've picked up on it yet or not, but when you see he who finds a wife, I thought a wife was already married, Who finds a wife? I think what the verse is saying to us is, look, if you're, no matter whether you're talking about a wife or a husband, if you find a mate and that mate is not already a wife, mm-hmm. or already a husband in their hearts, in their lives, in their preparation, putting a ring on their finger is not going to make them one.
All right, then.
And so God says, be attentive about this. Pay attention to this. This is the rest of your life we're talking about. This is your future, your destiny, your drive, your life. And I know a lot of singles feel pressured to get married. Like for somehow they can't be whole or be complete without a mate. Somehow they're missing something. They're a second-class citizen or their life's just not right without a mate. Well, let me say that if you feel that pressure is not from God. It's not from the Word of God, because the Bible has a whole chapter in the New Testament, 1 Corinthians chapter 7. That whole chapter is about marriage and relationships and being single and being married and why you should be married and why you should be single and what are the benefits of being married and the benefits of being single. I mean, it gives you a whole argument about whether singleness or marriage is right for you. It says if you can't control yourself sexually, get married. Have your own mate. If you can, if you don't need that, then you have the option of not being married. I've had people, and of course, I've been pastoring so many years, but I've had people that have come to me before, male and female, that have said something in this vein, maybe not these exact words, but in this vein. Pastor, I think something's wrong with me. Well, what would be wrong with you? I think I'm a homosexual. And I would say, well, do you like men? If you're a man, do you like men? Or a woman, do you like women? No, sir. I mean, not any more than I like women. You know, I mean, you know what I mean. I mean, I have friends that are men and friends that are women. I said, well, then you're not homosexual. I said, you may have a gift though, because the Bible talks about a gift that some people have. Now, it's very few people have this gift, and the reason would be obvious, because if a lot of people had this, there wouldn't be a lot of babies being born on this earth. And after all, that's God's plan for the reproduction of this earth. So greatly, most of us are mated. You know, we don't have the gift that God talked about in 1 Corinthians 7. It's called the gift of celibacy. And all that simply means is I don't need sex. I mean, it's not on my mind. I don't have to have it. I'm not driven toward it. It's not something that motivates me or pushes me. And, you know, I'm just, I don't have to have all that in my life. And if you don't have to have all that in your life, then you don't need a family, because you don't need all the entanglements of a family. You don't need all the exclusions of your life that a family brings to you. You know, and when you're part of a couple, you don't make all the decisions. You might have the corner office, but there's another office right beside you. And both of those offices make decisions about what's going on in this relationship. And you don't have children, and you don't have the expense of that, and you don't have to take care of them and wonder about school and help them do homework. And I mean, they're just all kinds of things that if you're not married, that's not part of your life. You can do anything you want to. You're a sole proprietor. I mean, you can go anywhere you want to go, at any time you want to go, stay as long as you want to stay, work where you want to work, go back to school if you want to. I mean, you can do anything with your life, because you're the only proprietor in it. And the Bible says that's okay.
Yeah, yeah.
If that's you, that's okay. As a matter of fact, it would be way better not to have a mate than to be hooked up with the wrong mate.
Yeah.
Because life can really be sad. I don't know. I'm sure that you've noticed this. If you've ever had relationships, if that relationship's good, life's good.
That's right.
If that relationship's bad, man, life's bad, right? It's just sad. It's just completely dominated and taken over by the relationships we have in life. And so the Lord tells us, okay, he who finds a wife. Now, the word finds, I don't know, gives you the feeling or the illusion that God's talking about you're not really hunting for a wife. You're not really out, you know, trying to get a wife. You're not desperate housewives, and you're all in a tizzy about trying to find a mate, and you're all just beside yourself. This verse kind of gives you the idea that you're just out living life. You know, you're doing your thing. You're walking as God had put before you. You know, your life is good. It's maybe not upside down. There's no rush or push to try to find. And then all of a sudden, boom, out of nowhere, boom, you find that mate that God puts in your life. And I guarantee you, if I had time to let you stand up and give a testimony, most of the people that are in relationships in this room are in relationships that just happened. They were somewhere, they saw something, it caught their attention, and boom, before you know it, there was someone. They were minding their own business, doing their own thing, and then just all of a sudden, boom, it's a God thing. Look at your mate and say, it's a God thing. It's a God thing, yeah. It's a God thing. Single, I guarantee you that there are people that just, I mean, it's unbelievable. Bev and Lawrence, Lawrence taking care of his mama. Taking her to work, bless his heart, poor mama, she had to have a ride. Lawrence took her to work. Sitting behind a desk in the school where she worked was another beautiful young lady he fell in love with, and there was Beverly Boone. I mean, it just happens that way, and God says, it's a God thing. All right, so let me then give you a couple of insights, about four or five of them, that this passage, Proverbs 18, tell us about that as far as being single goes. And I know, you know, I'm in a relationship and I don't need this. Do you have any children? You don't think they're going to need stuff like this? How about grandchildren? Your grandchildren, they're going to just know everything about relationships and consider the things that need to be considered before they enter into them? All right, come on. So So we all have a stake in this, so to speak. Let's go back to the first verse and let's just see what has to happen. First of all, in your first point in your lesson in your Bible and notes that you have there is singleness is not isolation. Singleness is not isolation. I'm going to talk about it in just a second, what that means. But here's the verse. Look at verse 1. A man who isolates himself seeks his own desire. He rages against all wise judgment. In other words, a person who isolates themselves doesn't really care what anybody else in the world has to say about anything. The only thing they're interested in is themselves. They only care what they think, what they want, what pleases them. Life is all about them. That's what Proverbs 18:1 says about a person who isolates himself. Now, I'm just saying to you as a single that singleness doesn't mean isolation. And it doesn't, and you must not isolate yourself. Don't get off by yourself and live life as if somehow, because you don't have a maid and you don't have any children and you don't have a family, that, you know, you'll just live in this closet the rest of your life and nobody wants me, feeling sorry for yourself. Not living life, watching TV all the time, watching somebody else live their life on TV and these crazy unreality shows that are supposed to be spontaneous. Do you guys watch any of these shows? You watch like Bachelor and A Great Race and blah, all those kind of shows. I can't even remember the names of them. Do you watch those shows? I mean, I know some of you do because they wouldn't put them on TV if people didn't watch them. But I mean, you know, it's so funny because I have some relatives. They love The Bachelor, and it's so funny because they never miss The Bachelor, and it's just so captivating to them, and it's so exciting to them to watch The Bachelor because you never know what's going to happen. It just pops up, and I'm thinking, are you kidding me? All right, they were out on the edge of a cliff. Water down there, cliff, wind blowing gently, grass blowing gently. The bachelor just happens to be out there with the one girl that he really wants to propose to. It just happens to be out there in this nice setting with places and little rocks set just right so they can sit right there. There's not a cloud in the sky. The lighting is perfect. Sound is perfect. You can hear a pin drop of anything like that. You're seeing them from 4 or 5 different camera angles. Yeah. Do you think they're out there by themselves? Do you think that wasn't arranged, that's not been choreographed, and they have all the cameras in the right places, and they know exactly what's going to be said, exactly what time, which way to look, what way to talk, microphones hanging all over the situation out there? But that's supposed to be spontaneous. And it's just a pet peeve of mine. I don't know. It's like, man, don't watch other people live their lives. Live your own life. And just because you're single doesn't mean that there's not a place for you and that nobody wants you. But you'll convince yourself of that if you isolate yourself. God gave you an entire world to live in. I don't know why people want to get in a closet and live. They want to get in a closet, shut the door, start arranging the closet as if that's where God has designed for them to live, and then have the audacity to get mad at God because they have to stay in the closet when God's looking at you saying, hey, man, come out of that closet. Yeah. I got a whole house for you. Hey, look, come on out. Everybody else has. I mean, you get out of the closet, you know. So God, quit living in there, rearranging the furniture in the closet, and get out here and live some. Look, I'm just saying, put yourself out there. Involve yourself with people. Go where people are.
Yeah.
Take some more classes or something. I don't know. Whatever. Get a roommate.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
I'm talking about I'm talking about like same-sex roommates. You know what I'm talking about. I'm not telling you to find somebody to live with. I know. I hear all those roommate horror stories. And I was in college and I had a dorm roommate. So I know what you mean. You don't have to get a roommate. But find people in life. I mean, there are lots of ways to develop relationships. There are lots of places to find relationships. And do that because you never know right around the next corner may be the one that God has for you. Put yourself out there. Don't isolate yourself. All right. Second thing. So first piece of advice, get out of that closet. Number two, your words reflect your wisdom. Okay, now I know you're going, what in the world is that all about? All right, well, look, verse 2, Proverbs 18, verse 2. A fool has no delight in understanding, but in expressing his own heart. In other words, Proverbs is saying that somebody who is foolish doesn't care about having a conversation with people. They just like to run off at the mouth. And then look at the next verse. The words of a man's mouth are deep waters. The phrase really is should be translated, the words of a man's mouth are flood waters. That's what it really means. Deep waters are flood waters. And they just go out. The wellspring of wisdom is an artesian spring. And I know many may not have even heard of an artesian spring before, and it's not really super important, except that you know that an artesian spring is a deep spring. You know, like we sang just a few moments ago, we're deep, deep wells,
yeah.
drawing up water from deep, deep wells. Deep wells are artesian wells, that's what they're called, and they have nice, clean, pure water that comes from deep within. And it tastes good, and it's not full of all kinds of junks and minerals, and it's cool, usually cold, and it's just nice, and it's great water. So the Bible is saying that foolish people are people that don't care about others at all, just jabber all the time, just run off at the mouth with anything, with everything. They're not careful what they say. They don't know what they're talking about. They're intruding into everybody else's life, blabbering, and nobody else can get a word in edgewise because they won't listen to it even if you do. I mean, it's just that kind of a life. I'm just saying to you as a single that the deeper you are, the more attractive you are. I know that everybody goes after the beautiful people. And it's not bad to be beautiful, but most of us are taken. But anyway, it's not bad to be beautiful, and that's fine. And it's not bad to be wealthy or to have a good income and all, and that's fine. But if your pursuit in life is to find some beautiful person with a lot of money, good luck on that. And then secondly, even if you do find them, do you want to live a life like that, being basically bought and sold and you know, everything's about the physical and the extraneous. I mean, life is deeper than this kind of things, guys. That's what I'm saying to you. And I'm saying that if you will teach yourself and train yourself and put things into your life that are valuable, your life will become very attractive to other people. I mean, let's just say you get one of Miss Perfect, you know, and you take Miss Perfect out on a date. And Miss Perfect's beautiful to look at, but all night long, the only thing she can talk about is she sure does like the French fries.
Yeah.
That's the deepest thing she said the whole night. When you go home, what are you going to say? You're going to say, you know, she's really attractive to look at, and she's nice, but I don't think I could live the rest of my life talking about French fries because that's all she seems to know about. Yeah. I mean, I'm talking about put some stuff in yourself. I know you might have the bling blinging and the mirror singing, but what happens when you open your mouth? Huh? I mean, can you talk about normal stuff? Can you carry on a conversation about anything? If you can't, it's because you don't pay attention in class. You don't put anything in. You know, you don't pay. You don't. Do you know anything that's happening in the world at the moment? I mean, like a conversation comes up about the president right now being over there in with all the Arabian states and Palestinians and all that country. Could you say anything about that? Do you know anything about that?
No, I'm not interested in that.
Well, you better get interested. Because if you're going to be attractive, you're going to have to be able to carry on a reasonable conversation with somebody about something in life besides jewelry, plucking your eyebrows, and eating French fries. And I'm talking like I'm just talking to women. But you sorry guys, you know, You better get something besides guns and mud tires and stuff like that. Camo and fishing or something or another to talk about in life. I'm saying don't ever stop learning, because learning is important, and the way you speak and the way you talk are very important. Tanya and I started dating when I was in college. I was in my first year in college, and Tanya was going into her senior year in high school. And I was going to college in Jackson, Mississippi, which, if you don't know the area around here, and for some who may be watching on the internet and don't know Mississippi, Meridian is about 90 miles from Jackson. So I was in school 90 miles away. And we were poor. I didn't have a car or anything like that. So I had to stay at school a lot. I didn't get to come home back and forth a lot. So Tanya and I went on our first date at the end of my freshman year. We went to a Billy Graham crusade. Billy Graham was at the stadium in Jackson, and our church went. And so when I went home on Friday night, I was sitting on the back porch of our dorm watching church buses go by all week long carrying people to the Billy Graham crusade. And I'm out there studying for finals and trying to do all that, and I'm sitting here. I'm lonesome for home. I want to, you know, see Tanya. We just started kind of dating a little bit, and I was excited about going home and all that. And so we went home, and I know this will be hard for you guys to believe, but Tanya has always been beautiful. She's always been very talented and always been smart as can be, but she was very shy, and she didn't have a lot of confidence, a lot of self-confidence. I don't know why, because she had all the goods to be confident, but she wasn't confident. And so therefore she really didn't talk very much, and she was kind of shy. And so our relationship was just kind of like, you know, just surface level, little, you know, just kind of dabbling around with trying to get to know somebody. And it wasn't going fast in any of that. And then I went back to school. And when I went back to school, of course, I told you, I didn't get to come home a lot. Tanya would write me letters. She'd write me two letters a week, every week. And I waited for those letters. I wanted those letters. Ooh, they smell good. What was that you put in them? You know, she put something in them, some kind of a lavender or something that smelled really good. Because my roommate would even go to my mailbox and smell to see if he could. He would say, "You got a letter. I know you do." And sure enough, I started getting I got two letters. Man, I got two letters every week. And my roommate many times beat me to my mailbox and got the letters out and had already read them by the time I got there. Yeah, Warren Robinson from Quitman, Mississippi. And if anybody's watching that knows Warren, tell him I was talking about him on TV today, or on the internet today. Warren, he would get them, and this is read them. Yeah, I mean he was a pal. He was a really close friend. But anyway, the point being that he would get them and read them. And he looked forward to them as much as I did. I'm serious. And about halfway through the year, Warren looked at me and said, "Hey, if you don't marry her, I'm going to marry her." Because her writing was so good. It was so deep. It was so confident. It was so rich. It was so full. It was entertaining. It was great. And I thought to myself, now I could live with somebody like that the rest of my life. I'm just telling you that lots of time it's your mouth that controls your romantic destiny. And if you don't believe it, look, that's what it got me, my mouth. I mean, it certainly wasn't my looks. Just learn to communicate. All right, number three. All right, number three, your heart must be healed. Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Now, how long it takes to heal a broken heart, I don't know. You know, the Lord could do it quick. Yeah. Or it could take a pretty good while to be in the broken heart. I guess it really just depends on how the Lord works in your life and how others work in and the combination of those. Look at this verse. This is verse 14 out of Proverbs 18. The spirit of a man will sustain him in sickness, but who can bear a broken spirit? Mm-hmm. You know where a broken spirit comes from? A wounded heart. And in order for you to have a spirit that is not broken and for you to have relationships that are healthy, your heart has to be healthy. I mean, wounds in my heart and holes in my soul. I think about it like this. When I'm thinking about my spiritual life, and you think about what happens to you, and you think about the injuries that you have, the things that people say to you. I mean, if you're divorced, somebody said they would and they didn't, and now you've been rejected, and they've walked away. What's wrong with me? If it's happened more than once, it just intensifies that more. But you get wounded in your soul. It's like little holes get punched in your soul, and little holes get punched in your spirit. I know that doesn't happen physically. You following me? But I picture that, and I think about that, and I think about as I've watched people's lives begin to grow and begin to do better, and maybe they're even in a functional relationship now. Maybe they've begun to start to be in some kind of a right relationship. And all of a sudden, it seems like the enemy can just reach up and stick his fingers in those holes that haven't been healed, that are still tender, you're still touchy about, and he can just stick his fingers in and just pull you right back down. I mean, you can just get so far, and then all of a sudden, let me ask you, what can heal a wounded heart? Well, verse 22 of Proverbs 17, this is the only verse that's not out of Proverbs 18. It says, a merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit dries your bones. Do you get the picture? When your heart is wounded, it does something to you. It puts something inside of you. It creates stress and tension and strife really from within. And in order for your heart to be healed, it has to be a merry heart, so to speak. How do you get a merry heart? Well, here's the first thing you have to do. You have to reject that broken heart of yours trying to give you directions about how to fix it. You know what it says? Every time. Find me somebody that can fix me. That's what your old broken heart is saying to you. Find me somebody that can pull me out of this ditch, that can give me some life. And so if you're not, the first thing you have to do is reject that, because that is not the way to heal your heart. You'll be running around from place to place, from person to person. You'll be like this hyperactive human nightmare. Looking for somebody that can fix you. May I say to you, there is no one on this earth that can fix you. The Lord is the one who can mend a heart.
Yeah.
So here's what you have to do. You have to bring your hurts, bring the holes, bring the abuse and the misuse and the mistrust and the wounds and the pains and the fears and the anxieties and the angers and lay them at the foot of that cross and say, Lord, this is what my life has been filled with. I don't want this anymore, and I'm asking you to change my life. I'm asking you to take this out of my life and bring into my life that which you want. You know, I think a lot of times we fail to move forward in life simply because we just try to carry all our baggage with us. I mean, how are we going to live life? It's like, you know, you got lit and you're carrying. What's all that? Well, that's my past. Well, you got to let it go. Hey, come on. And go to places and be involved in places and listen to people who have positive records and good things and great evidence, and say, how can I do this? What do I need to think about? What is the best way to handle this? What would I do next? And live life and fill yourself up with the things that God says about life. You lay those things down and your heart can be mended. God can turn a broken heart into a merry heart, but only God can do that, you know? A merry heart does good like a medicine, but a broken spirit. So don't try to enter into a relationship with a broken heart. Why? Because broken people attract broken people. Are you listening to what I'm saying? You may be a competent, capable, smart, productive, wonderful, talented, gifted person. But if your heart is broken, I'll guarantee you, you can walk in a room with 50 people in it, and 49 of those people are just wonderful, great people and have life going and are moving forward and everything's up and going, and they're wonderfully functional, capable people. One person in that room can be have a broken heart like you, and I'll guarantee you, within 10 minutes, you two will be together. This is like magnetic dogs on the refrigerator. And then nobody can pull you apart. Because brokenness, rejection demands rejection. I mean, don't try to look for healthy living relationships until that heart gets healed. Because it's going to carry you down. And it's going and you'll be right back in the same situation all over again, just a different person. That's not what you want. So, anyway, got to get your heart healed. All right, let me give you another one. Uh-oh. There we go. All right, become a giver. Now, that might sound a little bit strange, and I know you're thinking about, oh, he's saying give money to the church. No, this is not about money, okay? I'm not talking about giving money. But if you want to, I mean, I will tell you. Look at this. A man's gift make room for him and brings him before great men. Now, that verse, even that verse, most of the time you hear that verse talked about, it's talking about your treasure and your money, and it'll carry you before people, and it's talking about finances and money. But let's think just a little bit deeper than that right now. All right, think about your gift. All right, 2 weeks ago, the message was whole couples, right? You remember this? And I said in that message, I said, we're kind of schizophrenic as human beings. We're kind of schizophrenic because we have two parts of our life. You remember this? Does this sound familiar? We have the giver part of our life and we have the taker part of our life, right? Okay. Shake your head if you remember. Okay. I don't need to preach that over again, right? Okay. I'm talking about this. I'm saying that if you will be a giver, you will be attractive to someone else in life. If you are a giver of positive thoughts, of good-naturedness, of wholeness. I mean, you walk in and what you're trying to do in any meeting or any group or anything is you're trying to be helpful. You're trying to be nice. You're trying to be polite. You're trying to be, you don't want to have a bad attitude. I mean, you are a giver in life. If you're a giver in life, that giver part of life is going to be attractive to people in life, and you can give. And if you give, and if you give out of your life, giving to someone is always attractive. But if you walk in there and your taker is out, and everything's about you, and everything's got to be right, and everything's got to go right, and everything's got to, you know, it's all me and my needs and my desires and what I'm going to do and how's this going to help me, and your taker is out, then you're going to be repulsive to anybody who meets you. I'm just going to say, you know, are you a giver? You say, I don't have anything to give. Yes, you do. Yes, you do. Yeah. God's filled you up with lots of stuff. They're like 1 Corinthians 12, 1 Corinthians 13, 1 Corinthians 14, Romans 12, Ephesians 5. All of those places in the Bible tell you that God has filled you up with a lot of things. If he's filled you up with service, man, serve others well. Be cheerful about it. Be happy about it. Look for opportunities to do it. If God's put mercy inside your heart, man, be warm and compassionate toward others. If God's made you a giver, man, I mean, take care of the needs and be a giver in life. I'm just saying that you have lots of things on the inside of you. You have lots of things that God's filled you up with. And if you will be a giver, you will be attractive to someone else. But if that taker comes out, it's going to be a tough road to go. You walk in all needy, you know, and all fragile and all high maintenance in life. Don't tell me that everybody in that room doesn't feel that. And you know what they say? Let me get away from them as quick as possible. So be a giver. All right, here's one other thing. And I want you to get these down. I'll give you all three of them. Recognize the principles of courtship and marriage. You mean there's some principles of courtship and marriage? Well, yeah, there are. And there are three stages. Here's the first one. Now, all right, let me set this up. Three stages of romantic life. All right, we're talking about relationships. We're talking about romantic relationships. You can have all kinds of relationships in life that aren't romantic, right? You have, you know, friends, neighbors, people you work with, all kinds. I mean, there's just all kinds of relationships that you have that don't fall into any of this category that I'm about to mention. What I'm about to mention is these romantic relationships, all right? You believe that there is some future to this, and you believe, okay, this might be someone that might be for me, and so I need to see. And so you're trying to develop a romantic relationship. There are three stages that you need to go through, all right? And do not skip any stage. Look at your neighbor and say, don't skip one. All right, a lot of people skip one and two, and they go straight to three. And those are the people that are lined up outside the court getting the certificates back and saying, yeah, it didn't work, did it? You would think it would, but it won't. It's just exactly contrary to what you think. But if you're going to start a relationship and you think this is it, all right, stage one is fellowship. What does fellowship mean? What is the definition of fellowship? A bunch of fellas in the same ship. That's what fellowship means. It means all of us are in the same ship, a bunch of fellas in the same ship. That means we're just all in there together. That means we're not paired up. We're not hooked up with anybody. We're just all together in the same group, just all in the same ship. And the Bible says this to us, and I love people, and I'm not a prejudicial kind of person against anything at all. But the Bible tells us that no two can walk together except they be agreed. And the Bible also says not to yoke ourselves with people who don't believe. So I'm in a group with a whole bunch of people. This is the time I find out, okay, are you like me? I mean, we're in all this together. We're in fellowship. We're in a big group somewhere. We're out at the mall, or we're in a classroom, or we're, you know, somehow we've been put in the same ship. So let's see here, while we're in the same ship, let's see if we have any spiritual exchange in common. I mean, what's going on here with our life? It's just investigating. It's just a time where you have an opportunity to see if there's any reason to go forward, or if you have any thoughts or ideas about I want to go forward, or this thing might, you know, I might want to date this person, or I like this person. I mean, just it's just that general wide open. That's stage one. Stage one of romantic relationships is just fellowship. All right, now let me give you stage two. Stage two is friendship. All right, stage one just happens when all of us get in the same big space, and it's just a general weeding out of everybody that's certainly not attractive to me. So, okay, they're not like me. This is not going to work. This just wouldn't be right. So I narrow it down. Now I want to go to the second stage of a relationship. I have found someone in that weeding out. I have found someone. All right. Then I move into a stage called friendship. And in the stage of friendship is when I learn about this person so that I can see if there's any reason to go further than this. This is where I talk to you. This is where you talk to me. This is where we see what each other thinks, what we believe, who we are, what are our goals, what do we think about life, you know, all these questions in life. And there are five areas, and I put them up on the board, that you need to pay attention to during this friendship phase of your relationship. You need, and these are extremely important, and let me just briefly tap them. intelligence. When, if you can't find someone that is reasonably in the same intelligence that you are, you need to leave them alone. I mean, don't be going after these rocket scientists kind of deal, you know. I mean, if you barely have a GED, leave the rocket scientists to somebody else. Because what's going to happen is eventually somewhere down the road, you're going to feel like you're being talked down to. You're going to feel like, oh, they think they know everything and they're smarter than me. I mean, it's going to cause problems. I'm just telling you, it's going to cause problems. Get somebody that's within the same reasonable area code that you are, all right? Energy. Energy just means that everybody in life has a life energy. Some of you guys are bumblebees and some of you are couch potatoes, right? Some of you don't want to be a bumblebee. I mean, you don't think that bumblebees are nice. So, I mean, being a couch potato, your idea of fun is sitting down on the couch with a sack of pigskins watching a baseball game. And I'm just saying, don't get hooked up with a bumblebee. Flitting around, always trying to drag you off the couch. Come on, you don't ever do anything. Why don't we ever go anywhere? I always wanted to go somewhere. Now, do you want to live the rest of your life with a bumblebee trying to pull you off the couch? No, you need to get somebody that likes couch too. You don't want to live somebody trying to always pull somebody back either, right? I mean, boom, blah, 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 out there, come back. Get back over here. You always want to go somewhere. Come on. You don't want to live like that either. So find you a bumblebee. I'm just saying, when you're in a relationship, when you're in this friendship, this is the kind of stuff you're trying to find out. Is this person for me? Is this a person I might could spend the rest of my life with? Number three, social interest. You know, there are introverts and extroverts. By the way, do you know what an introvert and an extrovert is? Yeah, y'all got a minute? 1 minute? Okay. Can't do it. Sorry. No, an introvert. I always thought an introvert was somebody that liked to get by themselves, and then an extrovert was somebody that was life of the party. But, you know, I heard a psychiatrist talk recently, and I had it, my little concept was all wrong. It's kind of basically right, but let me just tell you this. If you're an introvert, here's what it means. If you're an introvert, here's what it means. It means that when your batteries get run down, you like to be by yourself to recharge your batteries. When you get by yourself, it recharges you. It gives you your energy back. If you're an extrovert, when your batteries get low, you need to be around other people. Other people help you get your battery charged back up again. That's what an introvert and extrovert is. But, you know, there are, they're cave dwellers and, you know, road runners in life. You know? I mean, there are a lot of different varieties of people in life. And so in this area of social interest, what you need to find out is you need to find out what they are socially. Are you pro-abortion? Are you anti-abortion? Mm-hmm. Are you a Democrat or a Republican? Mm-hmm. You know, are you, do you go to church? You don't go to church. You believe you want a big family or you don't want any children? I mean, stuff like that. I mean, things that would say, okay, we kind of like the same things and we don't like the same things. Or if you find something out, hey, I couldn't live with somebody that, you know, was like that. So there you go. Don't say, use the gift of goodbye and say goodbye. Out of here. Cultural backgrounds. Cultural backgrounds are things that, you know, we have a lot of different cultures in our country. People come from all over the world. They bring their culture with them and they have cultural thoughts. And believe me, it does matter. I mean, things about child rearing are cultural. Things about holidays are cultural. Things about religious traditions are cultural. Things about families are cultural. I mean, there are a lot of things. I mean, look, ladies, do you want to be married to somebody whose culture says that you are an animal or you're worth nothing and that you have to ask your husband whether you can walk out the door or not? Would that be important for you to know? It sure would, wouldn't it, right? And that's an extreme example, but that's the stuff I'm talking about. What you know, just because they're beautiful and attractive doesn't mean they're for you.
That's right.
And just because they kind of like you and they're beautiful and attractive, it doesn't mean they're for you. Man, it could be some hell of life ahead for you if you don't understand these kind of things. And then values. What do you value? What's important to you? You'd be shocked how many people never talk about what really is important to them. Mm-hmm. They get married, and lo and behold, a couple of years later, they come crying in counseling, say, we got married, and I want to have a whole house full of kids, and he doesn't want any. None? You didn't know that before you got married? What did y'all talk about? You know? I mean, wouldn't you think, obviously, whether somebody wants children and somebody doesn't, that would be something that you'd find out while you were in this friendship. So there you go. That's the friendship phase. All right, so you've got the fellowship phase, which is just a bunch of you. You got the friendship phase where intellectually you begin to match up and mate up and see and talk and experience and blah, blah, blah. Now, here's the third level, all right? The third level is intimacy. It's the highest level, obviously, and this is where you have physical exchange. Now, I see you. Yeah, baby, I knew it was time. Go hop in the bed. Let's just jump in the sack and see if we're compatible. Let me save you some time. You are. You're compatible. You know why? God built you to be compatible. You ain't got to worry about that. I've never seen anybody get a divorce because they discovered, we're not compatible. Yeah, you are. You're compatible. Here's what I'm talking about. I'm talking about before any physical touch takes place. Seriously. I mean, I know you're looking at me going, you are weird and you are crazy as you. Listen, I'm just, all right, follow me for a second. Do you want somebody putting their arm around you who you are not going to develop a relationship because none of that other stuff we've been talking for 15 minutes about is compatible on you? Are you going to, you want them to hold your hand? Mm-mm. You want to hold hands with somebody that's not compatible in any way? There's no future for you because there's nothing like you. Why do you want to hold hands with them? You certainly wouldn't let somebody kiss you that has nothing in common with you and is going nowhere and you're not planning to have a relationship with. I'm just saying that there's no reason to get physical with anyone that you don't already settle steps 1 and 2 with. And if you can't settle steps 1 and 2, by all means, don't move to 3. Mm-hmm. Save yourself a lot of trouble, man. I'm serious. That physical stuff can be so captivating. It can make you... it can make you lose track of what you found out in 2. Because you just get overwhelmed with emotion and adrenaline and hormones and all that kind of stuff. And before you know it, you're involved in something and you go, how did I get in this mess? Well, you didn't follow rule 3. You jumped 1 and 2 and went right into 3. Yeah, and your life reflects that too. Willard Harley, I know that I wrote his name down for you in the first notes that we wrote. He wrote a book called His Needs, Her Needs. The book His Needs, Her Needs is where I got the list of 5 things that men need and 5 things that women need. It's a great book, Willard Harley. Look at your first notes. It's in there. He also wrote a book called Freeloaders, Renters, and Buyers. It's a great book, by the way. Freeloaders, Renters, and Buyers. And what this book is about is it's a way to look at relationship life. Look at relationship life like this. You know, you got a house for sale out here. This house is for sale. There's going to be somebody comes by and looks at it. You have people that come by and look at your life that are freeloaders. You know what a freeloader is? A freeloader is somebody that's not going to give anything. They're going to take everything. They expect you to give all of your stuff to them, and they're not going to add anything to this thing, and they're not going to plant one flower. They're not going to, sweep the porch off. They're not going to do one thing. They are a freeloader. And what you need to do is say, goodbye, Freddie Freeloader. I don't need any freeloaders in my life. Second kind of person is a renter. Now, a renter is the kind of person who pays for themselves, who tries to keep things reasonable and neat and collected and so forth, but they're not going to invest anything else. They're not going to plant a tree in the yard because they're just renting. They're not going to make the flower bed look nice because they're just renting. So you don't want in your life, if you're looking for a relationship, you don't want freeloaders and you don't want renters. You know what you're looking for? You're looking for a buyer. You're looking for somebody that wants to invest their whole self into this thing. They'll plant plenty of trees. They'll make the flower beds look great. They'll paint the house. They'll clean the gutters. They'll do all of that stuff. Why? Because this belongs to me and it's mine. I'm not in it for staying here a little while and then leaving. I'm in it for the long haul. We want to find buyers in life. So singles, see, you just have some options to think about. Hey, it's really a very exciting time for your life. Because all of it lies ahead for you. Sole proprietor, baby. Corner office. It's yours. Do what you want. Right now, you can date who you want to date. You can talk to who you want to talk to. You can go where you want to go. You know, go back to school, get another job. Whatever you want to do, the future is yours. But when you're in a relationship, remember now, God intended for relationships to be mutual, right? So you got to have a buyer. All right, come on, let's stand up. Yeah, look for the buyers. All right, praise the Lord.